Reese on the radio, making sense of the news. Yeah, even when it makes no sense at all. Now on WTIC, News Talk 1080.
All right, we are back, Reese on the radio, and I want to thank our guest for coming on to the program today. Mr. Michael Lombardi is here. How are you, sir?
Okay, how are you?
I'm great. I know that you don't have a lot of time, so I totally appreciate you coming on the program. We tried to work this out. I think it's been like a week now to get you here.
Happy to be here.
No problem. So, Michael, you're a diving scientist. I've never heard of that before. I was under the impression you were like a marine biologist by trade. Is there a difference between the two?
Yeah, well, you know, I've had a pretty interesting career trajectory. I'd say the title diving scientist is certainly unique, but I started my career as a marine scientist, and then I've spent the last almost 30 years in inshore commercial diving, primarily like marine construction, mm-hmm. underwater engineering, those types of tasks. So I spend the bulk of my work time underwater doing any number of things.
Wow. So you would have been like a guy, like say current event wise, like you would have been a guy who would have been hired to work on something like a Nord Stream, right?
Yeah. So okay. more inshore. So, you know, I've done underwater work on bridges and piers mm-hmm. and beneath ships. But yeah, whenever there's been a kind of a unique underwater problem to solve, mm-hmm. I'd be the kind of guy that you would call.
So you posted a video that I saw. You've maybe done several others, but I just got a hold of one. One of my listeners sent it to me and said, you've got to get this guy on. Because you were talking about Revolution Wind, and yep. there were some things that people weren't being honest about as far as the damage it was actually doing to the, I guess, culture around it inside the water. Tell me or explain to everyone here, if you can, as simply as you can, because I don't understand your world and I don't understand how the our Revolution Wind is affecting the water or around it or how it's doing more damage than good.
Yeah. So it's we're in a very complex set of circumstances surrounding offshore wind development. So, mm-hmm. you know, on one hand, you know, the kind of the greater good, the big picture that's been sold to the public is we need to do something to fight climate change, right? So this is one possible solution to reduce our demands for various fossil fuels and coal and whatnot.
Right.
On the other hand, in my opinion, and what I've attempted to document and share with the community in a variety of formats, is that we've seriously overreached out into the ocean environment to install these things. And right, so we're doing all this heavy construction not too far offshore, you know, yeah. around the 15 to 30 mile mark. Many people can see these things from beaches, you know, through Connecticut and Rhode Island. And in my professional opinion, this is industrial overreach. So all of the things that when you drive around and you look, you look in the port off of Groton, New London, or yeah. up here in Narragansett Bay, and you see all of this industrial shoreline, you know, these heavy industry development, lots of ships coming and going. The types of environmental problems that come with inshore development like that are significant and awfully understated.
Okay.
And in large part, that's because these are things we recognize we need, right? We need, we need ports and harbors for shipping and transport of goods and delivering natural gas and, you know, and for recreation, having access to the waterfronts. So these are things we've grown accustomed to really needing in our day-to-day lives, and we certainly do. But what's very, very dangerous is that we've taken the perspective of, you know, those environments being ours to take, and we've extended our footprint off 30 miles offshore.
Wow.
And okay. We hardly have a handle on how our industrial activities have impacted inshore waters. It's a fight every single day, right? There's constantly conservation groups fighting to preserve this wetland or that river or stop polluting this body of water, or, you know, there's always these these smaller environmental battles.
I was going to say, and by the way, if you're just joining us, we're on the phone with marine scientist Michael Lombardi. You bring a great point here. And as I'm listening to you, if I'm getting this right, and correct me if I'm not. So what you're saying is that we are industrializing our waterways, right? The ocean. And we're putting all of these other elements that are not natural to its environment, right? We're putting concrete in. There are other, there's a fail-safe inside the wind turbines for fuel, right? They actually use fossil fuel on those turbines when there is no wind. So now we're introducing other elements into the water, and it's affecting its ecosystem in and around it, bringing foreign agents into that water. Which again, as you just put it, we are putting our own footprint outside of, where we walk around, on land. We're now putting that into our water.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, we've got all this new industrial activity happening off the Northeast coast that hasn't been there before. Now this is where the arguments get a little bit murky. So we've had offshore industrial activity down in the Gulf of Mexico, Gulf of America, whatever you prefer to call it.
Right.
With oil and gas drilling. Now, that's been there for numerous decades, half a century or more. But the way our environmental laws are written, they've largely been in response to issues that we've had in the Gulf of Mexico, Gulf of America, with oil leaks in the past. Right. We've had terrible environmental damage. That's not disputed. But so the laws that have since come to play, primarily the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act, are written such that it makes it very, very difficult to make a quantum leap offshore in an area that's never been touched before and start with fresh development. So if we were to continue with development in the, down in the Gulf or off the, southern coast of California where we have existing development, that's more consistent with our laws than starting fresh somewhere else. So the litmus test, the set of criteria to allow permits to be issued offshore is very, very strict. And what happened here off the Northeast coast is those criteria were laxed and permits were expedited to facilitate this development. So the environmental battles that are underway all up and down the East Coast and quite heavily here in Rhode Island and Connecticut are all based on this issue where the environmental permitting has fallen short, and consequently we're introducing all of these new human impacts to an area that shouldn't have any human impacts. These areas should be preserved and protected and well managed so that commercial fisheries can succeed. And instead we've compromised all that in a very dangerous way.
That's, that's a huge part about this. I will never forget my first, trip to, Gloucester, Massachusetts, which is a fisherman community. Many of you might be familiar with the town, from a movie called, The Perfect Storm, or A Perfect Storm, I think it may have been, but it was with George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg about some fishermen who had been lost at sea due to this storm. And my first time ever in Gloucester, Massachusetts, one of the things that a lot of the fishermen talked about was how important that ecosystem was, keeping it as pure as possible. Because once you infect it with anything other than its natural habitat, then you're starting to affect people's livelihoods in ways that you wouldn't imagine. In other words, you could completely decimate the fishermen communities in and around that New England area.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's a very serious issue. So, one project in particular, Revolution Wind, which is intended to supply both Connecticut and Rhode Island through a power purchase agreement. It was permitted and, has been sited virtually right on top of an area we call Cox's Ledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, if you were to picture the bottom, this is very difficult to visualize because not many people go underwater to see these things.
Sure.
But if you were to picture the area out there, relatively flat, sandy, homogeneous bottom, and then you have this series of granite outcroppings, which are from, the last glacial maximum, right? So when sea level is much, much lower, you would have pictured this this kind of rock outcropping. That's the ledge. That's Cox's Ledge. And Cox's Ledge has been identified as what we call a habitat area of particular concern, an HAPC. You know, that's a okay. government, that's a government agency designation. So NOAA, the federal agency responsible for fisheries and other things, have designated that area an HAPC because it's historically a spawning grounds for cod, which are commercially important species to us.
Right.
The Atlantic squid, which are a commercially important species to us, and all kinds of other animals. So, you know, when the permitting came to be, state officials and state environmental agencies and organizations, grassroots advocacy organizations, all said, don't impact Cox's Ledge. And sure enough, what happened? The construction took place right on top of Cox's Ledge.
Whose idea with that, though? What was there any back and forth between the community and the government that decided that this was going to be where it was? Because it almost sounds like they didn't heed any warnings by anyone in the community who knew better.
They didn't. They were, and if you were to look back at some of the history, especially here in Rhode Island, has, they have a fisheries advisory board, which is basically the representatives from the commercial fishing community
right.
and the recreational fishing community. They advise the state agency responsible for permitting some of these things. And they all quit over this. They all stood up and said, you're not listening to us. You're telling us this is going to get approved anyway. You don't want our advice. The fishing community is getting screwed. We're out of here. This isn't right. And that kind of kicked off, World War III with the fishermen and the various permitting agencies. That's kind of what started this, about 3 years ago now.
So I may ask you, Michael, remember that the federal government, I remember the Trump administration had put a halt on this. Was that related to the fact that the fishery was contesting it? Was that independent of this, that the Trump administration put a hold on the construction of Revolution?
It's all intertwined. There's so much pressure to shut these things down. And, the current administration has said that, they're in favor of shutting these down for a whole host of reasons,
sure.
environmental and otherwise. And now, the decisions to halt and then restart and various permitting issues that are still being contested are really getting down to the finer details of, the legalities within the Outer Continental Shelf Lands Act and other laws that apply to these projects. So these are very, very nuanced decisions right now. And I'm expecting that a number of the cases will make their way into court over the next several months.
Yeah.
And it's going to take, it's taking that level of action by community stakeholders to protect the environment. And it's come with a lot of heat and a lot of controversy because – you have people saying, "Oh, well, if you're against offshore wind, then you must be in favor of more drilling."
Yeah,
it's not the case.
this is so weird to me. I got to be honest with you because, look, I used to rag on people all the time. When I didn't own a car, I took the bus all the time. But I used to laugh at people who were crazy climate alarmists, right? And I used to say, you drive a car, but you're concerned about the ozone layer, and all this other stuff. I said, I do more for the environment, and I don't believe in climate change. You people are absolutely – but then I come here to Connecticut, and I hear Governor Lamont wants an EV mandate. Everybody's got to drive an electric car. They're trying to get rid of fossil fuels. And then we hear about this Revolution Wind thing, and I'm literally watching the government fight against the fisheries or other environmental groups, and they're fighting each other. In essence, they're telling us on paper that they both want the same thing. They want a clean environment, but they're at war with each other. And guess who's winning? The guys who are actually doing more damage. And that's in this case, the local government. They're going to put in this, for them, it almost seems too important to get Revolution Wind off the ground and operational, even though they know or they've been told that the on the backside, it's going to actually hurt the environment. I've only got one question for you. Why do you think they want this project more than they want to save the environment?
I mean, at this point, honestly, it's political favors, and there's been so much money moved with this entire initiative. I mean, billions and billions and billions of dollars between subsidies and tax credits and, you know, funds to various universities and research organizations.
Yeah.
By the way, who, you know, the entire, and this has been heartbreaking as a scientist to see this in my community where, you know, even the science community has shifted from prioritizing conservation in understanding in order to better preserve and protect these environments to now let's monitor and mitigate the impacts of these industrial activities.
Wow. So in essence, allow them to go on. We'll just monitor them closely to see how far they go.
Exactly. So to give you an idea of, you know, to again, try to paint this picture of scale out there. Each turbine at Revolution Wind and at all the other sites has stone dumped around the perimeter of the turbine as scour protection, right? So as the water moves and the tide changes, these things won't get undercut. So each turbine has several acres of stone dumped as protection. So this is an area that, let's say, was somewhere where you'd want to ground fish for scallops, right?
Okay.
So the scallop boats, they drag through these areas and harvest scallops. Now, this isn't, it sounds like a destructive technique, and yeah, it churns up the bottom, but this is an area that's been cultivated over hundreds of years.
Right.
Scallop fishing isn't anything new. But now it's covered in stone. So we have hundreds of thousands of acres offshore right now that cannot be fished using historical methods, nor can any of that historical knowledge be applied to fishing new areas because the entire ecosystem has changed.
Wow.
So
it can affect, you know, in essence, it can affect the entire industry in a short period of time because we're talking about hundreds of acres of area where there's no longer any fishing.
Hundreds of thousands of acres have been impacted on the near term, and then where that is an issue long term is these projects aren't intended to be permanent, right? They have a 20 to 30 year shelf life. At some point, they will be decommissioned.
Right.
So what does that mean? Well, you might take the turbine out so we don't see it from up here.
Yeah.
But all that stone is on the bottom forever.
Right. All the mechanism is there, and that's in perpetuity.
Yeah. If that's in perpetuity, you've completely changed the bottom habitat of the continental shelf forever. And we're never going to get that back. And that is, you know, that's grossly negligent on the part of all the politicians that have gotten behind these things. And shame on the science community for not standing up and saying, hey, you know, we need to really look at this closely because we're talking about, you know, this is a material change to the continental shelf, basically from Cape Cod all the way down to Virginia.
Wow. And, that, you know, far down.
That far. There are projects underway or permitted or in various states of being permitted from here to Virginia. And by the way, it's not just the bottom. I mean, this is right in the middle of the Gulf Stream. This is the you know, the primary migratory path for all kinds of whale species and dolphin species. I mean, this is a really exciting area for marine natural history. And we just put a construction site right in the middle of it.
Wow. Michael Lombardi, I thank you so much. I appreciate you being here. And I know you don't have a lot of time. We're going to keep in touch with you. If you can, I got to bring you back because as this thing is going on and some of the litigation is going on, I'd like to get some feedback from you from where we are. But thank you so much for being a guest today.
All right. Happy to come back. We'll talk soon.
You got it, sir. Thank you. Michael Lombardi, everyone, we will have him back. We'll talk, take your phone calls on the opposite side of this. Stand by, more news, more views, and of course some other headlines when Reese on the Radio returns on News Talk 1080 WTIC.
I don't want to say anything, but, it's our birthday. I'm sure you knew that already, and I'm sure you've got a wonderful present, 100 years, by the way.
We are back, and again, thank Mr. Michael Lombardi for being a part of the program. We tried to get him on like a couple of weeks ago, but this wind project is a lot dirtier than we all heard, and it's funny how the story just went nowhere, probably because there's some more pushback against it, but we're going to get more details on it. I didn't ever think I was going to be this guy who's going to be exposing this environmental nonsense going on. I do, by the way, I want to mention it before we get to headlines, that a recycling plant in Middletown has invited me to come to their plant. And I guess that they were upset when I had mentioned that, you know, this recyclable nonsense was, you know, it's complete boondoggle. But not us! Okay. Okay. I guess they want to speak for all of recycling. Fine. And I said this before, I'll say it again. If it don't apply, let it fly. But you want to make this about you, we'll make it about you. I'm going to go down there and I'm going to ask you some tough questions. And I know that there are some people out there who just say, what does he know? You can find out. You're going to find out. So I'm going to take you up on your invite. I'm going to contact you this week. So be ready for that. Hide all the dirt. Hide all the stuff that you know that I'll be able to point out. So we'll be down there. All right. Let's get to some headlines. Where is Christoph Murphy? Senator Murphy, as you all know, in the last year, he's been able to get at least $1 million in donations. He even gave away a lot of half a million of it to various organizations in and around the country. But with that $11 million, many people are saying Chris Murphy must be running for president. And there is a long Washington Post article out about him today. If you've got an hour or two, you can read it as I did. In fact, our news guy, John Silva, he started reading. He goes, damn, that thing's long. It is long. It's very long. Somebody spent months with Chris Murphy to do this piece. And let's just say that CT report came out of it. Chris Murphy's having a midlife crisis. But that's not the headline. The headline is this. They did some polling at the University of New Hampshire on likely contenders for the 2028 campaign. Well, I'm going to start with the Republicans first. On that list, the Republican more than likely to be the candidate in 2028, you guessed it, J.D. Vance, comes not only in first, ladies and gentlemen, he's far ahead of his closest competitor. According to the New Hampshire Republican presidential primary poll, J.D. Vance sits at 51%, with Nikki Haley coming in second at 9%. 51-9. Tulsi Gabbard with a 8%, a 1% differential between her and Nikki Haley. Which, by the way, folks, I just want to say this. It looks like there's a likelihood that we could get a female Republican president if Nikki Haley and Tulsi Gabbard are considered number two and number three on that list. That's really promising for people who care about identity politics. After Tulsi Gabbard, Marco Rubio comes in with 5, Sarah Huckabee Sanders with 4, Rand Paul 4, Ron DeSantis 3, Vivek Ramaswamy 3, then it's Tim Scott, Tom Cotton, Glenn Youngkin, Kristi Noem, Brian Kemp, and Ted Cruz. By the way, Glenn Youngkin, Kristi Noem, Brian Kemp, and Ted Cruz, they all come up with 0 on this poll. The only people who got a number was Tom Cotton and Tim Scott. Both of them had 1%. Now to the sad part, the Democrat Party. Aside from the fact that, again, Chris Murphy, who is anywhere and everywhere, is nowhere on this poll, even at 0%. Who ranks higher than Chris Murphy? Stephen A. Smith. comes in higher than Chris Murphy. Let's look at the number. Who is the number one Democrat contender for 2028? Well, it's none other than Joe Biden's favorite Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg. Pete, come on down. Pete Buttigieg. Yes, coming in second, Gavin Newsom with 15, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez with 14, Kamala Harris with 11, Bernie Sanders with 8. Bringing up the rear is J.B. Pritzker, Andy Beshear, Amy Klobuchar, Mark Kelly, that was Obama's pick, Cory Booker, Josh Shapiro, Gretchen Whitmer. In the zero columns, Wes Moore, Ro Khanna, Rahm Emanuel, and, as forementioned, Stephen A. Smith with 0%. But Stephen A. makes the list, and Chris Murphy does not. By the way, I do want to make this clear. If you're wondering why Chris Murphy is belly-hooed about and gets so much media attention, I was starting to think about it, and I was going, what really, really doesn't make sense that this guy's getting all of this press. But I forgot something. I totally forgot something. Do you know who Chris Murphy has the endorsement of? Like the person who kind of crowned him or coronated him as a political heavyweight? Well, sometimes a gift can be a curse. It was none other than Barack Hussein. He was the one who told everyone that he was a rising star in the Democrat Party. Yeah, he platformed him. And that's the reason why Chris Murphy has not been able to kind of break that plane, is because if Barack Obama endorses you, you're a sure-fired loser. Ask Hillary. It's the kiss of death. So, you know, not only that Chris Murphy weirdness thing, he keeps talking about the new Democrat Party, but keeps endorsing the old guys. They don't seem to understand that at all. Also, speaking of Democrats, Democrats have badly weakened their party with left-leaning ideas and rhetoric, growing only with self-described white liberals. So African-Americans who are in the Democrat Party, you are in the party of whitey. Just so you know, you are. You are overwhelmingly guided by white liberals, while losing ground with other voters, they say, according to this new center-left group called The Welcome. They consulted hundreds of thousands of voters over the last 6 months for broad findings, including 70% of voters think that the Democrat Party is out of touch. Most voters of the group that the group found believe that the party's over-prioritizing of protecting the rights of LGBTQ plus Americans and fighting the aforementioned climate change nonsense, while not caring about, this is odd, securing the border and lowering the rate of crime. That's what this new former super PAC is reporting to Democrats. They reported to them this week saying that you are prioritizing things that no one cares about and you need to get to the core issues, securing the border and lowering crime, which Donald Trump owns now, which technically we know we won't touch. You won't touch because Donald Trump is at the helm of both of those issues. So, again, as I said, folks, the Democrat Party was a wrap. And you know, it's funny that everybody's echoing that now. I said it first, and now everyone is following suit. Oh, maybe we just need to scrap the Democrat Party, call it something new. I was the one who said it. I said they were gone by the way of the Whigs. And now everyone is repeating it. Whatever. Maybe I should get a finder's fee for that. Maybe I should ask. Anyway. Also, I suspected that this was happening, but a new report has come out and says that Harvard University has been lovingly giving its students A's more than ever before. According to a report by Harvard's Office of Undergraduate Education, nearly 60% of all graduates are awarded an A at Harvard, and that is up from 40% over a decade ago, and it was less than 25% 20 years ago. So it appears that Harvard University isn't, they're just giving the A's away. There's no real academic prowess at this university. I've always thought that a Harvard education was bogus anyway. But another thing that I said on this very show, on this very network, 3 years ago, I don't think a Harvard education gets you anything. I think if anyone were to walk up to you today and say, I studied at Harvard, they might as well say they went to DeVry. Nothing against DeVry. Okay? Okay, DeVry's a good school, but you get my point. You guys have always been a punchline. DeVry folks, you know I don't mean you. You get my point. It's just for the joke. For those of you who went to DeVry, I applaud you. You know? I'm probably going to call you to fix a plumbing incident at my house because I don't do that work. Okay? Or fix my car. I utilize you guys all the time. It's good work. It's good work you guys do. Don't get me wrong. Now for the stupidest thing I read today.
Do I look as stupid? Yes, you do. Stupid as can be.
This could very well be the stupidest person on the face of the earth.
Don Lemon is an idiot. He was asked by some silly podcasters about what is arguably one of the most beautiful women in news media. They asked Don Lemon this question. A gay man, homosexual, obvious partisan hack, liar. Not disingenuous, a liar. They asked him about Megyn Kelly of the Megyn Kelly Show, formerly of Fox News, formerly of NBC. Here was the question.
Is Megyn Kelly chopped?
I don't know what that means. I don't know what is chopped. I've heard it, but I don't know what that means. What does chopped mean?
She's going to get mad at me, dude. I don't know if I want this here.
What does chopped mean?
Chopped means, like, not hot.
Yeah, she's chopped. I don't know. The whole MAGA look.
It's all the MAGA ladies.
Too much.
Kind of looks like a Barbie doll covered in, like, WD-40.
I think she looks trans.
Let's end on that note.
She looks clockable.
Guys, you can go in the chat room or you can call up 860-522-WTIC, 860-522-9842. Megyn Kelly looks trans, Don Lemon said. Whatever you do, don't lose it. But that had to arguably be the dumbest thing a person ever said. Megyn Kelly? Megyn Kelly. I'm not even a fan. But to say that about Megyn Kelly, have you seen Megyn Kelly, Roland? Do you know who she is? Would you say she looked trans to you? Are you kidding me? We do? It's time to take a break. We'll be back. More news, more views. It's Reese on the Radio.
It's Reese on the Radio on News Talk 1080 WTIC.
I'm so mad at Roland right now. He couldn't help but find, like, the worst pictures of Megyn Kelly. He was like, you see this picture right here? The worst. And that was just a regular search, right? Those pictures you found? Just one picture of her looks like makes her look like she has a strong jawline. And I'm like, okay, fine. That's an arguable picture. But you have to look at her live. If you haven't seen any video of her, you know exactly what she looks like. Lori asked a great question. Curious minds want to know, how would Don Lemon describe Michelle Obama's looks? That's just... Lori, put the knife down, ma'am. Put the knife down. That's just mean. All right, in 30 seconds, we got an emergency, what is it called? It's an EAS, right? Okay, we got to do an emergency EAS in about 15 seconds. So stand by for that. And then when we come back, we will, of course, introduce traffic and weather, of course, for the first time today with Mark Christopher. So stand by 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Yeah, we're doing the EAS though. Oh. Oh, so we have to wait for him to just fire it off so I can just still go? Oh, just keep going until he fires it off. Okay, whatever. The case may be. Bushwhacker says maybe to be appealing to Don, he needs to tell himself Megan is trans. That's actually that's a good point. Craig in the car says, if Megyn Kelly is trans, her surgeon should win the Nobel Prize. That one's gonna get an applause. Alright, EAS in the tank. Okay, we are back. I had my headphones on for that. That was brutal. That's right. They felt like somebody was putting a jackhammer in my ear. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the case that you've been hearing during the news with John Silva. I'm sure he'll talk about it again with Mimi Torres and the body cam footage. There's some unfortunate information in all of this that people are missing. We'll talk about that as well. Now, let's get our first check of weather and traffic. Mark Christopher, he's in the BPS Traffic Center. Hey, sir.